it continues to paralyze us, to which the age of heavy industry has already pushed the human being through his increasing dispensability, through his separation from productive labor, and through continuous worry about the wretched social welfare. The cause of progress appears to the victims as though freedom or lack of freedom did not matter for their well-being. Freedom suffers the same fate as did virtue in Valerie's conception. It is not longer fought over, but forgotten, and in any case embalmed like the slogan of democracy after the last war. Everyone agrees today that the word freedom should not be used as a phrase. To take it seriously is utopian. At one time, the critique of utopia helped to maintain the thought of freedom as the thought of its realization. Today, utopia is maligned because no one really wants to see its realization. They strangle the imagination, which Babel already took lightly. Footnote 9, text. If the terror of the Gestapo at least brings into existence certain subversive tendency beyond the borders of Germany, it also produces a disastrous respect for the lasting power of coercion. Instead of the present anti-Semitic, relentless and aggressive form of state capitalism, there are still dreams of state capitalism which would, with the grace of the older world powers, rule the people. There is no other socialism than that which is achieved by authoritarian means, concludes the state economist Pirou. Footnote 10, text. In our era, the authority of the state is exercised in the framework of the nation. Thus, socialism, even when it is international oriented, can only carry out its program nationally. Those immediately involved in the struggle are of the same opinion as the observer. No matter how honestly they intend to build a workers' democracy, the dictatorial measures necessary for its security, the substitution of a new ruling mechanism for the present one, they believe in the vanguard role of the party, in short, all the categories of repression which are probably necessary conceal so well the realistic foreground that the image on the horizon always spoken of by socialist politicians look suspiciously like a mirage. Just as liberal critics of harsh punishment who are appointed to the Ministry of Justice by a bourgeois revolution are usually worn out after a few years because their efforts are obstructed by provincial administrators. So the politicians and intellectuals seem to be exhausted by the tenacity of the existing order. The lesson to be learned from fascism, and even more from Bolshevism, is that what seems like madness to a detached analysis is at times the reality, and that politics, as Hitler said, is not the art of the possible, but of the impossible. Page 116. Moreover, this development is not so unexpected as one might think. In order to conduct their affairs in solidarity with one another, people will have to change their natures much less than they have already been changed by fascism. The narrow-minded and cunning creatures that call themselves men will some day be seen as caricatures. Evil masks behind which a better possibility decays. In order to penetrate those masks, the imagination would need powers of which fascism has already divested it. The forces of imagination is absorbed in the struggle every individual must wage in order to live. But the material conditions have been satisfied. Despite the necessity of transition, dictatorship, terrorism, work and sacrifice, the alternative depends only on human will. Problems which a few decades ago were thought to be insuperable. Technical or organizational barriers have been overcome for all to see. As a result, the simplistic teachings of economism, which were so prosaic, were dissolved into philosophical anthropologies. When technology can produce stockings out of thin air, one then has to reach for the eternal in man, namely to declare inalterable certain psychological characteristics in order to rationalize eternal domination. The fact that even the enemies of the authoritarian state can no longer conceive of freedom destroys communication. A language in which one does not recognize his own desires or become impassioned is alien. Thus, the bourgeoisie is no longer upset in the slightest over its own non-conformist literature. It has brought Tolstoy into the movies and Maupassant into the drugstore. Not only the categories in which the future is depicted, but also those in which the present is dealt with have become ideological. The conditions for the realization of utopia are so urgently ripe that they can no longer be honestly articulated. Any thought which is difficult to use and to label rightly arouses stronger mistrust in the courts of knowledge and literature than the very professions of a Marxist doctrine. The confessions to which such thinking was seduced through friendly persuasion in the pre-fascist era in order to be rid of it once and for all later on were equally useless for the subjugated. Theory has no program for the electoral campaign or even for the reconstruction of Europe, which the specialists will soon see to. The readiness to obey, even when it sets out to think, is of no use to theory. Despite all the urgency with which theory attempts to illuminate the movement of the social totality, even in its smallest detail, it is unable to prescribe to individuals an effective form of resistance to injustice. Thought itself is already a sign of resistance, the efforts to keep oneself from being deceived any longer. Page 117. Thought is not absolutely opposed to command and obedience, but sets them for the time being in relationship to the task of making freedom a reality. This relationship is in danger. Sociological and psychological concepts are too superficial to express what has happened to revolutionaries in the last few decades. Their will toward freedom has been damaged with neither understanding nor solidarity nor a correct relation between leader and group is conceivable. Is there no return to liberalism? The appropriate form of activity appears to be the extension of state capitalism. To work with it, expand it, and extend it everywhere to advanced forms appear to offer the advantage of progress and all the security of success which one can only desire for politique scientifique. Since the proletariat has nothing to expect from the old world powers, there would appear to be no choice but an alliance with the new ones. Since the planned economy which the leaders of nations are creating is closer to socialism than liberalism is, there should be an alliance between the leader and the proletariat. It would be sentimental to remain opposed to state capitalism merely because of those who have been slain. One could say that the Jews were for the most part capitalists, and that the small nations have no justification for their existence. State capitalism is said to be the only thing possible today. As long as the proletariat does not make its own revolution, there remains no choice for it and its theoreticians but to follow the Weltgeist on the path it has chosen. Such opinions, and there are plenty of them, are neither the most stupid nor the most dishonest. This much is true, that with the return to the old free enterprise system, the entire horror would start again from the beginning under new management. But the historical outlook of such reasoning recognizes only the dimension of the cycle of progress and regression. It ignores the active intervention of men. It values men only for what they are under capitalism, as social quantities, as things. As long as world history follows its logical course, it fails to fulfill its human destiny.